for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 612 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a special Halloween celebration at zoop.gg. I talked with Cassandra Jones from Let Her Be Evil and Richard Pace with Coven, a Book of 100 Witches. Let Her Be Evil is a celebration of unapologetically wicked women with cruel intentions. Of the nasty, the vile, the rage-fueled monstresses who know exactly what they want and aren't afraid to get it by any means necessary. Editor Cassandra Jones has collected an impressive team of 47 writers, artists, and letterers. Many have worked for Image, Dark Horse, DC, Boom, and Marvel. We talk about how this book came to be, delve into several of the stories in this 128-page book, and learn what else we can expect from her in the near future. This Zoop.gg project will conclude around Thursday, November 9, so be sure to back it once you listen to this episode. Then everything wraps up with my interview with Richard Pace, who also has a crowdfunding project happening on Zoop.gg. His is for Coven, a Book of 100 Witches, and it's described this way. Sassy, sexy, and full of supernatural charm, Richard Pace's witches have proven remarkably popular. All 62 drawings from Witchtober 2022 and 2023, as well as the 38 weekly Witchy Wednesday drawings, are now contained in this book. We talk about how this collection came to be, the special offers Richard is making for this crowdfunder, and what he has coming in the months ahead. This Zoop.gg project will conclude on Thursday, November 2, so be sure to back it once you finish listening to this episode. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Cassandra Jones is new in comics. She's a longtime editor in the traditional publishing world. With that background and her tenacity to break into comics, she's assembled a roster of creators for this new anthology, Let Her Be Evil, including Heather Antos, Brent Fisher, Rio Burton, Taylor Esposito, and dozens of other respected comics creators for this 128-page softcover. This anthology is not for the faint of heart. And I have the privilege of talking to Cassandra today. How are you doing, Cassandra?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Let Her Be Evil is doing very well on Zoop.gg. So why don't you talk about, how things are going? Because you had some good news as far as meeting your goal and things like that.
Yeah, of course. It was a bit unexpected, but we passed our funding goal on day one. I couldn't really believe it, and I don't think I still believe it. I have to keep refreshing the page to see the new number to kind of reinvigorate my belief in that we're actually making this thing and it's going to come to life. So I think currently as we're talking, I have somewhere around 16K, and we're hoping to raise as much money as possible for all of the creators involved.
Okay, now the thing that I always have to ask people, and when we talked about this before, when is your Zoop.gg project aimed to end currently?
Currently, it's November 9th.
Okay, my understanding is these things sometimes flex and move around, but November 9th is a good thing to, that's a good date. It seems like a lot of crowdfunding things are happening right now because the things they're trying to get done before the holiday season hits. That's one of the worst times for podcasters to find people to talk to because everybody is saying, ooh, we better be quiet during the holidays and stuff. And I would think that was one of the best times to do it, but what do I know? So,
No, I'm not sure. Yeah, that would seem difficult to gather people around at that time when everyone's trying to take their break, especially. They might not be wanting to take on that extra work of whether it be marketing or, you know, drawing anything when they're with their families and things. So, yeah, I really tried to get it done even before Halloween because it starts getting kind of tight as people make their plans.
See, I always say that people should be conscious of what's going on in the real world when we do these things, because I always tell the Klaus story. Grant Morrison came out with this Santa Claus-based story. The first issue came out right around Christmas, but the last issue came out in May. And I wondered how many people besides me were still buying the comic in the middle of May, because Christmas is long in the rearview mirror by then. So now they've wised up. They actually put out, not every year, but when they have one, they put it out the Wednesday before Christmas, whenever it is. And that's brilliant because, you know.
Yeah, that's really smart because everyone wants like that thematic thing, a great, you know, roll it up slightly, put it in a stocker. It's a great, you know, a stocking. That's a great little gift there.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is that the Wednesday after Christmas is death. You sell almost zero compared to the Wednesday before Christmas because people are past Christmas. I mean, it's like the radio stations. If you like Christmas music like I do, midnight on Christmas Day, you're done. It's 12:01. Everybody abandons that and goes on to other things. And so this is a good time to, you're right, to have a sort of a horror-themed anthology going on. So I have to applaud your ability to get that in before Halloween actually started. That may have contributed to your success so far.
Yeah, I would like to think so. I also tried to get it so that we would have launched before New York Comic Con.
Oh.
Because I knew that if we were in those first few days when I went to Con, I would be able to talk to, you know, a lot of people who are interested in comics, period, like that whole audience is there, and also connect with the artists and writers who are involved so that I could give them promotional material to hand out while they were there.
So you were at New York.
I was. I was only there for one day, though, because by the time, it was a mistake. But by the time I realized that I wanted to go, there was only Thursday tickets left.
Oh.
So I went on Thursday, and then I went, oh, that's why people go multiple days, because I don't think I realized how big it actually is.
Oh, yeah.
So next year, definitely going to try and get like a multiple day ticket.
Did you have a pro pass or did you just bought a Thursday ticket?
I just bought a regular Thursday pass and I walked around like a little noob. it was really fun though.
That's my favorite comic convention. It really is. I enjoy going there. You can find anything at New York Comic Con. If you like the glasses that have superheroes printed on the side of them, you can find more than one booth that will actually sell those things at New York Comic Con.
Yeah, it was hard not to get enamored at every table and stop for super long, and then you realize that the day is almost over.
And I have to tell you, the one of the things that I have a friend, and he and I would go there, and we'd be in Artist Alley. And gosh, the people literally were going there. That if they were even remotely interested, it seemed like they would buy everything. We were down to the last copy of the book that we had, and it was a reader copy, so everybody had fumbled through it and stuff like that. And people were still coming up offering to buy that copy.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. Yeah. I said, I like this place.
I think everyone gets really excited about supporting each other. And it's like a magical place, almost like Disney or something, where you're like, money doesn't exist. This is Monopoly money. It's fine. And, well, you know.
I think people come there actually really interested in product and in stuff. But just, you know, I've been to many cons where I've sat behind a booth and people walk by and don't even talk to you and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at New York, let me tell you, that Artist Alley is golden. So if you ever get a chance to get a booth there, I would highly recommend it.
Definitely a dream. I was down there, I think, for 5 hours. I didn't escape. I only spent a little bit of time on the main floor. Most of my time was spent checking everything out and speaking to people. And it was a great networking opportunity. And it was also cool to see everyone's stuff up all at once.
We could talk about cons all the whole time, but the truth of the matter is you've hit on one of the most important things, I think, for a comic creator, and that's networking. And cons are so valuable for that. If you end up in a booth next to somebody and you end up talking to that person, you know, it doesn't matter if they're a well-known name or an unknown. Oftentimes, you both have some things in common, and it's a great relationship that helps you down the road. So that's one of the things. You may not make all the money you'd like to make at some of these cons, but you will make connections, I think, that are going to be valuable for you.
Right, so, right. I mean, I met people I was really excited to meet at con. I felt like it was one of the best networking, you know, events that I've ever been to as a professional in books or in comics.
If you're like me, looking for people to talk with, boy, New York is one of my favorite. I gave out more cards at New York than, and the only place I gave out more was at San Diego.
Yeah, I was kicking myself because I didn't make actual business cards. I only made promotional material for Letter Be Evil, which doesn't even have my email on it. So I was like scribbling my email on the back of the postcard. And yeah, another hard knock, another learned lesson from all of this.
Well, one word of warning. I gave out all these cards and I was following up. I took their cards as well. And so I would call them and several people told me, oh yeah, people give us all kinds of cards. We always just throw them out. From some of you. And I was like, I spent all that money on cards and you guys are throwing them out?
No, I hate that. I actually really can't throw business cards away. I have so many business cards just from we have a con here called Mice. And I always collect a bunch while I'm there. And I just have like a tin full of business cards. Will I ever like contact every single person? No, but I'm a little hoarder and I like to have them. So all of the cards that I have from this year's con are currently sitting on my desk, and that's a to-do list item to go through and follow everyone and, you know, email the people I said I would email and all that. But yeah, everyone's sort of dealing with con cred right now, and I figured I would give them a moment before I started pestering them with an email.
It's a good idea. Yeah. It's a good idea because I have I never know who I'm going to want to contact after the con is over with. And so I keep them all too. I have stacks and stacks of business cards and stuff like that.
Maybe we can start trading them like cards. Just like, oh, I like that one. Here, I have this one.
It'd be like baseball cards.
Exactly.
Have you got the Jeff Johns card? Well, I've got another one. We can trade for that.
Yeah. We're going to make it the next big thing.
All right. Well, let's get to Letter Be Evil. And let me read the description that it says on here. It says, if you're looking for sympathetic anti-heroines or villainesses with tragic backstories, you won't find them here. Letter Be Evil is a celebration of unapologetically wicked women with cruel intentions, of the nasty, the vile, the rage-fueled monstresses who know exactly what they want and aren't afraid to get it by any means necessary. Featuring 17 original stories, and of course, the good folks, this anthology sets out to explore and nurture the darkest sides of femininity. Ooh, so what prompted you to do this anthology? I'm curious.
I think I started recognizing an archetype that villainesses had in the media that I was watching. And usually women weren't, quote unquote, allowed to be evil in a story unless they had a tragic backstory to back it up. And they usually had a tragic backstory involving a man or a child. Particularly like child loss or miscarriage or rejection. And I started thinking to myself, I was like, man, can't we just be evil because we're evil, because we're sharks, because we're greedy? Why does it always have to come back to, you know, the evil that the patriarchy has done upon us first, or this huge moment of grief tied into like motherhood? And so I started searching for stories that didn't follow that archetype, that broke away from it. And I had trouble. I couldn't even get past sort of this first requirement of, you know, her backstory doesn't contain a man or a child. And I was desperate for something different. And when I was thinking about doing an anthology, I it wasn't the first idea that came to mind. I was trying to think of, you know, different topics that I could do, something that I would find intriguing and interesting. And then I went, oh, duh, like, I'll do that. I'll, you know, ask for these types of women who have their own agency and their own desires and are just as dark and interesting as the male villains that we receive in comics and, you know, comic movies and things like that.
See, you're pushing all my buttons here when it comes to this, because I have been reading male lead characters for decades, and I have a fair idea where things are going to go with men and stuff like that, when they're, particularly when they're the lead character of a story. But when, as soon as you put a woman in there, I have no clue what's coming. Because women can be all over the board as far as I'm concerned. And I like that. I like to be surprised and not know where things are going. On the other hand, though, I have what I always call the Captain Janeway story. When Kate Mulgrew was chosen to be the captain in Voyager, some women went online and said, she cannot be a male character who is female in body only. To put it nicely. And they said that she has to be maternal. She needs to be motherly. She needs to talk out everybody's problems and stuff like that. And I was like, isn't that really limiting? I mean, you know, a female lead can only be a mom.
Right.
So to me, whenever she didn't act like a mother, I was cheering her on, because that's what we need to see. I mean, you know, I love my mom. Don't worry about that. But the thing of it is that it's important to have, especially with women, I think that there's a lot of variety. I mean, men can be scientists and scoundrels and athletes and you name it. They can do everything across the board. But you take a woman, sometimes it's women that want them to be in very limited roles. And I always tell them, don't do that. Don't limit the what the characters can be. So your book, I think, is going to break some stereotypes with that.
Yeah, maybe. I think, too, limiting female characters to only maternal things kind of cuts out a segment of women who can't have children or don't want to have children or are uninterested in having children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of the reaction to that, you know, the negative reaction to it is due to, like, what we are expected to do as women and the kind of forces that we are working against. And I think it's important to acknowledge those and bring those into the fold in the narrative. But it doesn't mean that, you know, they always have to be at the center of a woman's story, because we're so multifaceted. There's no need to make it only this one-dimensional, you know, thing.
See, I think women have long struggled with that. I mean, Lois Lane was always, help, Superman, help, you know, she'd get in terrible danger. You know, I thought she was smarter than that, but she'd be in the Eiffel Tower, she'd be stuck on the bottom of an elevator. And I'd be going, how in the world did a smart woman like that get into that situation?
Sure. I think in those instances, they're being treated more as devices than characters, which I could see it would be easy to do as a writer, because you're like, I need Superman to do something. And it has to be, you know, full of tension, and there's a love interest, and people love that. You know, and so it's an attractive thing to write, and much less hard than, you know, Lois Lane in this, you know, instance of, like, this kind of comic that we're talking about. Not that she has never been a complex character, but, you know, making her have all of these interior thoughts and things in the time that we're talking about would have been much more difficult and strange and out of the norm. But I don't know. I think, you know, sure, like, maybe, like, the women that we're talking about are sort of like earliest 20th century, but I believe that it comes out of sort of the moral code that existed in Hollywood at that time, and what you were and were not allowed legally to have in film. There's this great book, Unlikable Female Characters, by Anna Bogatskaya, that I read actually after having done the submission process for Let Her Be Evil. One of the contributors brought it up to me, and I'm so glad she did. Because she goes in depth about this topic and how it sort of rolled out into our, you know, media zeitgeist of what we are capable of seeing women do and not do without them being lambasted by critics and audiences and things, because it's just not what they expect to see, and therefore, you know, different is bad. And you know, quote unquote, unlikable or unsellable. But obviously it is likable and sellable, or else Letter Be Evil wouldn't be, you know, at 150% funded now. So I think there's been sort of a change in what people are willing to see, or, you know, to accept and to love. And, yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, people's reaction to the actual content.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, one of my very favorite female villains was in a Disney movie, of all things. It was in The Little Mermaid. If you've ever seen that movie, the villainess is horrible. She's just a mean old terrible. And the terrible things they put the poor Little Mermaid through, and her father and stuff like that. She, and when she gets it in the end and she gets it good, I remember standing up and cheering.
Yeah, Ursula is good.
She was something else. But you know, the thing of it is that that's rare in my watching of, and I consume a lot of media, that's really rare to come across a female character like that.
Sure. And I could be wrong, but I think it has something to do with, like, she like tries to then come in and steal Prince Eric, and there's like, like weird romantic rejection things going on. So she doesn't meet the, it's so hard. It's so hard. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's so difficult to find a character who breaks these norms. I don't know.
But they're so memorable when they do.
Yes. Yes.
You know, exactly. They like, I, to this day, I mean, how many years ago was it that I saw The Little Mermaid? To this day, Ursula is one of my very favorite villains because, you know, she relished it. She enjoyed it. She kept coming up with the most unbelievable things to do to the poor Little Mermaid and her father and stuff. And I just always thought, man, she's having so much fun. That's what makes her such a nasty villain, is she's enjoying it. And so that was just so amazing. That's something else. Now it's, what's interesting, according to the Zoop.gg, it says that you have 47 writers, artists, and letterers.
That's right. Yeah.
Involved in the book. And that's many of them who work for Image, Dark Horse, DC, Boom, and Marvel. And boy, there's a nice long name of a list of them. I won't read them all here, but there's a whole bunch of really good ones. So you were saying that you gathered these people through, how did you get them again?
Yeah, good question. I made a social media post with my call to submission on it. I posted it to Twitter, and it kind of took off in a way that I wasn't quite ready for. I believe that it probably became known in the comics community because I had Heather on my side, my mentor, and she reposted it. And once people saw it via her page, they started coming to my page and reposting it. And it sort of became circulated amongst the, you know, online anthology community. And they were really excited. I mean, I feel like the idea kind of sparked an interest in everyone as far as like, hey, this is different. I want to try it. Because they're creatives, and that's what creatives do. And so I was really grateful and kind of astounded by the response that I received. I also offered free feedback. I don't know if I would do it again because it was a lot of work. But on the first script that was given, I offered free feedback through a certain date. So if you sent me your script before a certain date, I would send it back to you with comments and you could resubmit. And I think the idea of free editorial free like feedback was also very alluring for people.
Okay, now I don't want to, let's see, there's preview section on Zoop.gg as well. There's The Trap Fixer by Sarah Navin. A girl who grew up with doomsday prepper parents watches a woman die in one of her elaborate hunting traps while she contemplates the end of her world. And the artwork's interesting. Lettering's a little screwy, but that's okay because it fits the tone of the story.
Exactly.
And then there's, I'm sure I can't pronounce it, Casa Nickel by Matt Mortal, a woman with a slot machine for a face kills a family of moths for a bounty, inevitably creating a never-ending chain of violence with their adolescent son, who will surely seek her out in the future. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
That one's one of my favorites, I think, because it almost feels like an entry number one to a series. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious what happens to this moth kid. It's sort of like a setup for a Rivals kind of short. Yeah, I would love to see what Matt does next if he were to continue writing these. But
then the next one is Let Her Eat Cake. Marie Antoinette and a demon with the facade of a court jester go all camp rococo, I hope I pronounced that right, on the French court. There's something about Marie Antoinette that just, you know, gathers people and makes them interested. So that's going to be an interesting story. Underfoot, after a ball falls down a sewer in this LOTR meets IT fantasy world, a young boy volunteers to retrieve it, despite his friend's warnings of what lurks in the dark. Given that the theme of this book is wicked females, I have a feeling he's going to encounter a wicked female down there.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. She's extremely scary. She freaks me out to this day. If you don't like spindly legs and fangs, then stay away.
Okay. The next one is The Witch. A trans man is tormented by a witch who crawls down his and his family's throats to make them say horrible things until he defeats her in a battle of dreams. Ooh, boy, that timely. That's a story that's good for today, I think. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Smart Home. An AI device, boy, is that timely, learns bad habits from her creator and provides him with exactly the kind of love he has always given others. Ooh. Ooh, that's something. That'll be something, because everybody's talking about AI. This couldn't be a more timely one than that.
Right, right.
Then there's Cuckoo, a manipulative bully and a sibling duo whose parents all co-own a timeshare on a lake, delve into the cruelty of isolation and favoritism.
Yeah, this one's tough. This is a tough one, in my opinion, to sit through. It's kind of brutal. Yeah.
And interestingly, there's a story called Good in a book about bad females. It says, the thief steals the sword of truth from its guardians, declines to join their volleyball club of good guys, and goes on to wreak havoc once she learns that nothing in this world is black or white. That's interesting.
Yeah, that one is super fun. Mo is incredibly talented, and I just have so much joy every time I read this story. It's a good one.
Next one is Freak. A serial killer idolizes her mentor. That's interesting. Not many female serial killers around. But the mentor is a man who puts people to death as a silent nurse until she realizes he's kinder than she's ever wanted to be. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe you don't know about the female serial killers because we're just that much better. So
I remember when they had the first one, it was in Florida. Mm-hmm. And this woman was going along getting hitchhiking on main roads, and they would find the guy's car and the bodies off in the forests and places and stuff like that.
Well, hitchhiking was the way to do it.
the thing was that everybody thought for sure it was a man. And all of a sudden, they bring in an FBI profiler, and the profiler says, you know what? This is a woman. And they were like, no. And she was kind of the first really well-known serial killer. I figured her name off the top of my head, but yikes. That was something. And the next one is called Listen. A silk pajamaed sorceress's home is invaded by a goody two-shoes paladin who thinks she has a handle on how the world works until she gets schooled and perhaps a little smitten.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that does it.
This one makes me laugh. It has a lot of interesting back and forth, I think, about the morality of good and evil and where you think you stand.
Okay. Now this, if I'm not mistaken, I think you wrote this one.
Yeah, that's right.
Deprivation. After killing her mother, a woman is trapped in a deprivation tank with the manifestation of her guilt and madness. I think I've seen some of the art pages, and there was a preview that was made available to me. The art is both beautiful and horrifying.
Yeah. This is Mo again. So that's why I was so enthusiastic about them, because they killed it on their piece and then they went on to kill it on mine. And I teared up a little bit when I saw the pages because I just couldn't believe how gorgeous it came out. I'm extremely excited for everyone to take a look, not just because I wrote it, but because I think Mo really crushed it. This one was tough. It was based on a real experience that I had with obvious creative liberties. And the whole thing takes place in the dark. So that was the inspiration behind the art. We wanted to sort of have the reader feel like they are in the deprivation tank and then do very vibrant colors for the spirit that she encounters.
You know, it reminds me of when I was a young kid. My mother told me a story where she watched a movie, and there the person was in a room and looked up, and outside the window was a person's face looking in the window. Sure. And, you know, I had for years, I couldn't look out the window if I was alone.
Thanks, Mom, for scarring me forever.
And I just was like, wow. I said, you know, Mom, I said, I wish you hadn't told me that story.
Now I have to live with that too. And so does everyone else who's listening. So you passed that right on.
It was just a funny, it's, you know, now I go look back and laugh because I don't even bother with that and think about it anymore. But sometimes stories like that remind me of that. And that is something else. All right. Next one is called It's a Life. Soda the Norslinger stays with a poor villager family and fulfills all her carnal needs in hilarious fashion. Hilarious fashion? What's the story with that?
Yeah, so Soda is a dark elf who is on her way, I imagine, home from the battlefield or like traveling through this village. And she comes across these villagers and basically takes all of their stock for the winter and eats it at their table and romances the, you know, villager father's daughter and threatens to eat his son and maybe perhaps does beat someone before traveling on and leaving them a little worse for wear. But it's a comedic one. And I think a lot of people will have a good laugh reading it.
So your book may be one you don't want to read right after eating.
Yeah, no, I would not recommend eating while reading, no.
Okay. Next one is A Cave Overlooking the Ocean. A succubus selects a woman comforting a friend after a breakup as her next meal because, well, good people just taste better. And there's a picture of her smile. It says, it's also appetizing, she goes.
It's an interesting concept. I really like what Kevin came up with here, where, you know, good people taste like sirloin steak and bad people taste like, you know, a squished McDonald's burger kind of situation. And the emphasis that the succubus places on what makes a good meal is some of the most interesting dialogue, I think.
Yikes. All right. Next one is Dogma. And it says, a woman vows to kill God after the loss of her beloved dog. That's, you know, as somebody who's a dog person, my heart's been broken so many times by dogs over my life that I'm just sure it's all scar tissue now.
Yeah, I think we've all been here and can relate to this story and also hopefully experience a catharsis with the character as she goes on her rampage.
Great. But next one is The Hill. A young genius murders her brother to clear the way for her college education and her future as an astronaut with NASA. Wow, that's brutal.
Yeah, this one's also pretty tough. I think this one might be the darkest one, and for that reason is probably also a top tier choice for me. I think it really encapsulates what I was trying to get at with Let Her Be Evil, where her goals are entirely, you know, intellectual or based on her own success and achievements and her dream. And, you know, we We all want to achieve our dreams, and we want to do, you know, sometimes I think we enjoy bad characters because we want to be, you know, as horribly as ambitious as they are to achieve them. But we don't, because obviously that's bad. Don't do that. But you get to live momentarily, you know, vicariously through characters like this.
Well, sometimes you get to see what it would be like if you actually did that. And so therefore that's sometimes it's a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Sometimes not so much. So be careful with that. All right. There's two more left on here. It says Crazy Hex Girlfriend instead of Ex-Girlfriend. The heartless witch Cerise tricks a brokenhearted teen into a violent choice. Amy Chase, Thistle Tender. That's an interesting name for an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks like the artwork is really interesting. A little cartoony in a way, but
I love what Thistle did with the art. It's really rich, and they came up with some amazing. There are labels at the end covering jars of hearts, and they are gut busting. They make me laugh a lot. But this one is very gory. And if you like Ursula, I think you would like Cerise, because it's sort of a similar kind of setup. We have, you know, this dark witch and someone with a broken heart, and kind of what can happen in that interaction between the two of them when you're, you know, acting off your pain.
Well, they always say that a good villain makes a great hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a namby-pamby villain and they're up against this person, it doesn't, yeah, you don't feel so much for the hero in a case like that. So that's really interesting. Last one here is written by Heather Antos. It's She Is. A fearsome rogue reflects on her childhood while storming a castle with her gang of misfits and mutants. Boy, that's a perfect comic story if I ever heard one.
Yeah.
So this is your mentor, as you mentioned. I imagine you like this story a lot as a result of a good story and the fact that she kind of taught you a lot of what you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think Adrian really ran with the concept, and the art speaks for itself. I mean, it came together so quickly as well. I had minimal edits for Heather. Her story was awesome. It kind of struck a different chord than the other stories that I received as well. I'm thinking particularly of the last panel, which kind of has the character in a position of power and badassery, and Adrian just, I don't know what to say. I mean, if you just, you know, go check out the Zoop page and take a look, because, wow.
It's interesting because it's black and white and red.
Yeah.
The red color is, I always said, if you have to measure blood in quarts, that may not be a story that I might want to avoid. And there's lots of red.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The black, white, and red was actually my direction. I felt that it would help bring out some interesting things about the story. And also, it was an interesting learning point as well, because Heather and I had a long conversation about using color intentionally. So that was cool. It was a good learning
moment. All right. Well, those are only obviously some of the stories. That's not all of them, but they're all really interesting. That's really, you got quite the collection there for that. Now, there's a bio of you down there that has some interesting points to it. It's, it mentions the stuff we talked about you being an editor with professional experience. You're also a Lord of the Rings enthusiast, a sci-fi nerd, a bodybuilder, a sword swinger, a girl punk band listener, and a certified tea master.
Yeah. Wow, which one do you want to hear about first?
I'll read one more sentence. She's passionate about helping queer writers publish their stories. That's quite a variety of things. I don't know many people who have all that on their resume. So how did you go into all that? Did one thing start off and that kind of led you on to other things?
Yeah, well, I grew up watching the Lord of the Rings movies and being a big fantasy nerd, reading as much fantasy as I could get my hands on. Same thing with sci-fi books. It kind of leaked, you know, one into the other. You couldn't get enough of one, so you started branching out, and that's how I, you know, got the sci-fi stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, what else did I have? A bodybuilder. I love lifting. I mm-hmm. It's sort of my peaceful place to not be thinking about anything. I like to play music super loud. I don't like speaking to anyone. And I go and I just lift really heavy things and I put them back down and I walk home ready to, you know, address emails and things again after a long day at the computer.
Do you are your emails different after you have a session or are they the same?
I tried to stop writing emails before they would be different and the same with coming back. But yeah, I think it's just more of like a headspace thing. I don't really get to have a commute. I work from home and, you know, that time that I think you spend thinking nothing to be creative, whether you're in your car or you're walking somewhere, you know, or running an errand and your brain has time to run and think about something else. I don't have that as built in my life as I used to. So lifting sort of takes that place for me where I'm not working on someone else's story. I'm not running a project. I'm just, you know, doing something physically exertive and my brain is left free to, you know, think about whatever it is that I am interested in doing next creatively.
Cool. Now, which girl punk band is your favorite?
Ooh.
Or do you have some favorites? Maybe.
I would say I love Slot Face. I love Girlpool and Beach Bunny. I would put those at my top three. Maybe Soccer Mommy is another one that I like.
Okay. Yeah. I have never heard any of those.
I wasn't really expecting you to go, oh, yeah, Soccer Mommy. I listen to them every day.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. My tastes run very different directions.
So. That's fine.
But I do have to ask you, what is a certified tea master?
All right. So I did my dues as a barista. I worked in a cafe from like the year after I graduated until the year I went to my graduate school. So like the year in between those two degrees to stay in Boston and make money. And as part of our training, we had to, you know, go through various tests so that you can make all the different kinds of drinks. And there's a tea company here called Mem Tea, and they will do special trainings on tea. So that you could also become not only an expert in coffee, but in tea. So I signed up for all of them and I did them and I have a certificate that just says, wow. I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about tea. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Do you still work in that or is that something you don't do quite anymore?
No. So I just did it for like a year and a half or something between school. And then after school, I immediately went into publishing.
Do you have to refresh in order to continue to be a certified tea master? Or is that once you've got the certificate?
You know, I don't know how official it is. They just give you a piece of paper and they're like, good job, kid. And then you live the rest of your life. I imagine if I wanted to get a job again somewhere else, being a barista, they might be like, hey, this is from, you know, 2019. Are you sure?
So. Well, since you're an editor and I'm an editor as well, I got to ask you an editor question.
Yeah, of course.
When you've got three items in a sequence, do you put the comma after the second or don't you?
Oh, you're talking about an Oxford comma.
Yeah.
I think I'm team Oxford comma. Yeah.
So you put it in there?
Yeah, I would put a comma in.
Yeah, you and me both. When it's not there, I get confused.
Yeah, it does look like a second half of a sentence, though.
Yeah, well, these two look like they're related things, and sometimes they're not. So I always tell people, put the comma in there just so that people know that there are three separate items.
Yeah, it's a serial list. The comma belongs there. Well, actually, at my publisher where I work now, we don't use a serial comma in our nonfiction content, and it makes me cuckoo bananas.
I knew two editors who were getting married, and if you wanted to start an argument, all you had to do was bring up the Oxford comma.
Oh, no.
And they were, I thought, this is not going to work.
Yeah, no, I don't.
So that's great. Well, I have to tell you, Cassandra, I think you've got lots of good things going on, and I'm so happy for your success. I am just, it's so great when a book takes off. And Let Her Be Evil, of course, is the name of it. If you go to zoop.gg, you got a / the letter C like cat, /, and this is all one word, letter B evil. And so it's exactly the way you would spell it, but you take out all the spaces and push them all together. And you're heading for 500 supporters as we're talking. So I'm just so grateful that you decided to take a stab out in this area and do something different. Boy, I love different and variety and stuff. So I think I'm grateful for your success. I think it's going to be a great read. Is there a chance for a letter B evil too?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you so much. That's really sweet. And I have been asked several times about a letter B evil too. And I'll just say for now, I don't know. Maybe, but I feel I'm interested in doing something else and moving on creatively into different projects.
Well, it doesn't mean you can't go back to it after you do other stuff for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one day I will. So we'll see.
Maybe do letter B good.
Yeah, well, I actually was thinking about doing a Let Him Be Good, because I feel like a lot of times we don't let men, you know, express their feelings and be soft. And so I'm interested in maybe doing something like that. Who knows? I don't know. You should come look at my journal and you can pick what I do next, because I don't know.
Well, that all leads to the next question. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I think my username is @Cass, C-A-S-S, Ann, Jones. And I think that's my main one. I also have a Blue Sky, but it's listed on my Twitter, so you can go there to check it out.
Very cool. And again, you'll want to wait until November the 9th to get in there and support this, because Cass is probably sitting there refreshing still on the screen to see if anybody who signed up recently.
Yeah. Exactly.
People do that all the time, but let her do that. Let her get so far that she's okay, I don't have to look anymore. Mm-hmm. So that'll be great. So again, Cass, it's Let Her Be Evil, and don't wait till November the 9th. Let's get to it right away while we're in the hot Halloween mood and get everything taken care of so that she can move on and get the things ready. Now, one last question, though. Are you starting to do conventions, or are you still not quite certain about that?
I would love the opportunity to do a convention. I just haven't, you know, gotten that far. I think New York Comic Con this year was my first one, and I was like, you know what, this is a new goal. So I will definitely be trying to get out there, but,
Because some people still, even though after the pandemic is largely behind us, there's still some people who don't want to do that. And there were some people, I understand, who came back from New York with COVID.
Yeah, it's understandable. I think a lot of people got COVID at this last con, and that's super tough. It's hard to risk your health, you know, each time you go and justify it. So I think I'll just try to keep getting my boosters and, you know, see what the atmosphere is like.
Well, safety first is always a good thing, and it lets you keep doing Letter B Evil stories and stuff like that. So stay safe. And Cassandra, it's again, one last time, Letter B Evil. It's on zoop.gg, and I think you're going to enjoy this. I love good variety, and this book has all kinds of good variety in a place where we don't often go. So Cass, keep it up and do wonderful stuff like this in the future. And I hope I get the chance to talk with you again sometime.
Me too. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Artist-writer Richard Pace has applied his talents to numerous industries, including games and television, but comics remains his greatest love. Hailing from Canada, Richard has contributed to Batman: The Doom That Came to Gotham from DC, Pit from Image, New Warriors from Marvel, and Imaginary Fiends from Vertigo. Currently, he works on Savage Sword of Conan for Heroic Titan and the funny and controversial series Second Coming from Ahoy Comics, which he co-created. And you've got something going on in Zoop, Richard, so how are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk with you. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you came to. Batman, the Doom that came to Gotham. I'm a Batman guy, so I got to talk about that. You co-created that with Mike Mignola?
Yeah. Back in the day, I was supposed to draw a Hellboy one-shot. And for very good reasons, Mike decided to shelve all. There were more Hellboy projects in development than Mike had time to draw himself. So it was very much going to look like it wasn't Mike's Hellboy. It was going to be a whole bunch of people's Hellboy. So he canceled all of them. And in the meantime, I was thinking about all the Elseworlds that DC was doing. And I thought, well, no one's really done anything more than the most superficial horror aspects with Batman. I said, what if H.P. Lovecraft created Batman? And I had it kind of worked out. And since Hellboy kind of went, pfft, I faxed it over to Mike, and he loved the idea. He reached out to Archie Goodwin, who also loved the idea, and suddenly we were doing that. I was originally set to draw it, but I had some health issues that came in. I mean, the book was a little cursed. I mean, Archie Goodwin passed away while overseeing this book, and then nothing happened for a while. We got a new editor, and he was gone almost immediately. And then after another long delay, I had some issues with one of my eyes, and I just couldn't do it. So we got Troy Nixie to draw it, and wow, he brought the perfect amount of weird to that book.
Mm-hmm. And they did an animated version of that.
They just made a movie. I'm actually really, really – I was a little dreading it. I mean, because, you know, sometimes they take things a little too literally, and they might miss the point of the original story. But these guys, they updated the story in some ways. They made some better decisions than we did in terms of, like, what to do with – the setup of the story, some of the monsters and stuff like that. And I'm very happy with it. I'm very happy with it.
That's good. That movie ended differently than I expected. Let's just say it was pretty close to the book. If I remember correctly.
Yeah. It's very close. It had a lot more of I guess cinematic is the proper term, like the big special effects, even though it's animated. It had a lot more of those big, you know, animated big light show of the big final fight than we were able to do in the comic. But it's, yeah, it kept all the main story beats intact. It did a nice job interpreting the characters. There's the wonderful thing. Like, I got a lot of friends who are screenwriters, and when they're adapting something, the good ones, they want to stay true to the source material in a very real way, even if they have to change things because of the new medium. And I think the crew that did the Doom to King of Gotham did a stellar job.
Wow, that's good to hear, because I know so many times when properties get taken and optioned out, that when the movie or whatever it is comes out, it looks nothing like what the person originally thought. And yeah, I've heard people complain bitterly that that's not my story. What happened? What did they do? Because, you know, movie and TV people always feel like they got to put their stamp on it anyway. So that's nice to hear that they got that right.
Yeah. I think animation's a little bit more respectful than film in many ways. Because, I mean, I have worked in film. I've dealt with some producers who they don't even like the people who work in film, let alone people that they're taking the story from. Wow. So it's I think animation treats original content a lot more respectfully than most film does these days, unless you got a director or a really, really powerful actor who loves the source material. You're gambling every time you do one of these things. So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I've seen some of them. I could name DC movies that I looked at and went, what? That doesn't even resemble the story it's based on. It's just a lot of things for them. It's not only DC. I mean, other ones do it too. I mean, I watch the thing and I go, where did they get that from? So
sorry about that.
That's okay. So let's talk about, well, you're doing another book that Conan. Talk about what you're doing for Conan and Titan.
All right. So right now I'm working on, I believe it's going to be in the first issue of Savage Sword of Conan next year. My friend Jim Zub writes the Conan Monthly book, which is doing really, really well. They're going into, I think, their fourth printing of the first issue.
Wow.
Two is going to be reprinted. Three, I'm pretty sure, is scheduled to reprint. And four is due out soon. Just looking online for that. And it's going gangbusters. So one of the key things they're doing, they don't want to rush like a whole bunch of Howard stuff out like crazy and just dilute the energy for the book. So the next big step is to bring back a big magazine-sized Savage Sword of Conan.
Ooh.
In black and white. And Jim had the story in mind for me. And because he's local to me, we sat down together. We worked essentially Marvel style, but I got to sit across the table from him while I'm doing the layouts for this massive story. And that was the most fun I had telling a story in decades, if not years.
Wow. You know, you had a real unusual experience for these days. A lot of the times the creative team don't even live in the same parts of the world anymore.
Well, that was kind of true back in when I broke in the 90s. Everything was FedEx. This is at the time where Marvel had the weird theory that, you know, artists and writers shouldn't talk. Everything should go through the editor, which was interesting. The phone was used a lot more back then, for communication and everything and faxes. Now with the computer, everything, there's just as much communication, but it's almost immediate, with all the video and, email messenger options you can use to talk with your collaborators. Mm-hmm. It makes it feel like it's closer, even if it really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many issues is Savage Sword of Conan going to have? Is it going to be an ongoing or what?
Well, it's going to be in the model of the old magazine. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. It was largely a lead Conan story with one or two smaller stories. Very rarely, usually only when adapting a Conan book would the lead story be multi-parter. Most of the time it was like pick up an issue, you get a big Conan story, a couple other Conan or Solomon Kane or Cull stories, and you'd get your 64-page magazine worth of Conan or Robert E. Howard content every month. So I think that's what we're aiming for here is an ongoing big Conan magazine where you get these wonderful – and you can really bring in talents from everywhere who want to get their stamp on Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really excited to be a part of it.
I'm sure because that's Conan. Marvel had the rights to it, and then it went over to Titan. And there's all kinds of Conan stuff going on right now, so it's kind of interesting to see. So yeah. I'm curious about that because it's so interesting because every once in a while people say, Conan, we're done with that. That's so old. And then boom, out comes a number one and everyone just goes nuts. And that's where we're at right now. Conan is hot, hot, hot stuff right now. So
to be absolutely honest, and I have to be careful of this because Jim wrote a bunch of that Conan stuff at Marvel. I felt Marvel, as it currently exists, didn't understand what I had with Conan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it came out, sold gangbusters for the first little bit, but then, I mean, Conan fans don't want Conan hanging out with Thor and Iron Man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good for a what if, but they made him essentially an Avenger. I mean, I had no interest in that at all.
Yeah.
So I would think that's probably largely true of a lot of Conan fans.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is he's off in his own universe again. He's got a woman that he's working with right now in the Jim Zub story. So I'm curious to see how that'll be. That's all one issue three. What happened? What happened? I don't know what happened in issue three. So I always get digital ones. If I can't get the print copies, at least I can keep buying the print ones when they come out because I don't want to miss it. So I'll be buying the digital one so I can know what's going on. So is there anything else you're working on before we get to the good old Zoop stuff that we should know about?
Well, Second Coming is still going strong. We're working on the fourth volume now.
I love that book.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to be so happy to be a part of, but understanding that I'm not really the guy built to draw it.
Mm-hmm.
I when I was asked to draw the book, I was asked, "Do you want to work on the next Preacher?" And if you're reading Second Coming, you know it's not Preacher. And so I was immediately yes, and I recognized how good it was and what it was saying, and that was important. But early on, as soon as we moved away from DC because of the weird protests, I wanted to get Leonard Kirk on board, who was initially unavailable when I was at Vertigo. I wanted to bring him on board to do finishes on the superhero sequences. Because his line is perfect for that. He's got a great comedic sense of humor. His line is really approachable. And I would have been just happy drawing all the old biblical horror stories, essentially, and having Leonard do all the modern stuff for my layouts. And I realized after the first volume, it was almost entirely set in the contemporary world. That's where the vast majority of the story was taking place. Mm-hmm. So I backed off just to get Leonard the good, solid voice on that. But yeah, we're very happy with Second Coming. We're working on volume four now. I think it's a safe bet there's going to be a volume five. And we might even go to six if Mark comes up with even more deranged story ideas we got to do.
I interviewed Mark for this, and I have to say, usually religious comics are worrisome. Maybe say worrisome is the word that I use. I'm never quite sure they're actually going to be as true to it as they might be to other materials. But this, when I talk with him, the things he's trying to communicate, and I really enjoyed it. He really has some good things to say. I always remember this one. There was a great big sign up there, and it shows like a guy who's just, "Let Jesus be your quarterback." And yeah. I was always like, I don't know if Jesus should be my quarterback. So I those kinds of things, it does make me think, and makes me think in a good way. So I am a big believer in Second Coming, and there's a lot of people. Of course, a summary of what this book is about, there's a superhero by the name of Sunstar, and he ends up with Jesus as his roommate. God puts him in there, and it's a really interesting thing. It's, God, of course, is sort of the Old Testament God, and Jesus is much more the New Testament person. And it's got such interesting things to say that if somebody doesn't read it because they're afraid of it, like I was, I think you're going to be challenged, but in a good way, by that book. I really love it. I think your art too really works really well on it. When they went to the Jesus to the religious theme park, yeah. I thought that was particularly really good, because where I live in the Orlando area, there is a religious theme park not far from where I am, and I'm scared to go there. So I just got that was a really interesting part of the book. I really loved it. It's just only you guys could make that really so interesting. I love when Jesus gets up to speak and they go, "What? We didn't come here to hear that." And I thought that was so thoughtful, and really, when I talked with him, I really came away with a different point of view on it. But I had really enjoyed the book before that, but now I really understood what he's working at. I just really, really, really well done. I have to say that book really sparkles in my estimation.
Yeah, it was so strange to me that anyone who could have read any of Mark's work before Second Coming would have thought he would have done, I don't know what they were afraid of. I think the people who are really upset are so used to always being attacked and ridiculed that they just assume somehow we're going to ridicule Jesus Christ. And the only way you can do that is if he's not Jesus and you're making a proxy to mock and ridicule. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, the only one we can't make fun of, other than him being too nice, is Jesus. He's too nice a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only that, where in the modern world where that can almost be considered a shortcoming, do we find actually any direct humor out of Jesus. Everything else is everyone else being an idiot.
Well, yeah, a lot of this has to do with the church and the church's interpretation of what Jesus said. And there's if you come at it with that understanding, you'll get a whole lot. Like I said, it'll challenge you. And it's good to be challenged in that way, in my humble opinion. So I love the book. At the end of the third volume really got me. I thought that was really interesting. I'm interested to see what happens next. That's the thing that I'm just dying to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, it's I think Mark really, really nailed what he wants to do. Like, there's a weird, shaky transition from volume two to volume three, in that he was doing a storyline and he decided it wasn't working the way he wanted it to. So he kind of just dropped it. Mm-hmm. And most people didn't seem to notice it, so I'm not going to bring it up. But I agree with the decision he made. And the focus on the struggle of parenting and relationships between fathers and sons was just perfect for this arc.
Mm-hmm. And there's a thing in comics about fathers and sons that I'm always interested in, because that's a relationship that we don't get to explore very often. And I thought that this book is particularly good in that, and not only with God and Jesus, but also with Sunstar and his progeny, shall we say.
Yeah.
And the end of the third one really makes me, I'm puzzled over what's going to happen next, because it's really interesting.
I don't want to spoil it, so I'm not.
Yeah, don't. I'd rather read it when it comes out.
It's. I like where Mark is going. Let's just put it that way. It's. I'm very happy to be a part of this project, even though I've largely backed down to just breaking down Mark's story, and doing the covers and really getting the impression across and designing characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's. It's just it's a fun project. I'll be sad when it's done, because the Ahoy people are great to work with. Although I just did a story for the new Cryptid series, which I think the first issue might be out. I haven't been to a comic shop in a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think I might be in the fourth issue with a really cool Bigfoot story.
Oh, wow. Okay. I have to keep my eye out for that one. So that sounds really interesting too. So anyway, those books are, I love a book that makes me think. I really like that. So like I said, I went with trepidation, but then when I understood what was happening and the stuff that was going on, I really have come to treasure that book. It really is something special. So
I'm glad to hear. Book, which is it's about the characters in a positive, even though bad stuff happens a lot in this book, because it has to, because drama, no matter what, at the end of the day, everything is going to have a positive slant on it. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, going into volume four, with the situation that happens at the end of volume three, you have to understand there's going to be some very human moments in there. And Mark's going to find a way to make that humanity appealing.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I'm so looking forward to that. Do you know when that's going to come up anyway? Any chance?
See here. I think the last issue of the previous arc, did it ship just last month?
I think so.
With the Zoop campaign and all my other deadlines, I'm like losing time. I just know it's October. I've roughly laid out the first two issues of arc four. Months ago, Mark said he had already written the first four issues, but I haven't seen the other two issues. I'm waiting for rewrite. Mark always does rewrites. So I'm waiting to get the rewrites for one and two before I list those as done and send them in.
Cool.
So then we also have to balance in Leonard's availability with his Marvel work. So once we get those nailed, I think, you know, as soon as we start, we're probably going to solicit within a few months of that. Mm-hmm. So probably spring next year.
Okay. It'll be worth the wait.
Yeah.
Because I've loved every book that you've done, I don't know if you wouldn't consider like 4 to 6 issues a book, but it's really good. I think I really enjoy the different chapters and how that's went. So it's really good. So let's get to Zoop.gg, shall we?
Yeah.
The project you have there is called Coven, a Book of 100 Witches. And let me read a little of the description here. It says, sassy, sexy, and full of supernatural charm, Richard Pace's witches have proved remarkably popular. all 62 daily drawings from Witchtober 2022 and 2023, as well as the 38 weekly Witchy Wednesday drawings, are now contained in this book, capturing the best of spooky season for you to enjoy year-round as these women cast their spell on you as you turn the pages. And I hasten to put in there, for mature audiences only. Which we have to be certain about, because I looked over the ones on the Zoop page. There's some of those, mature audiences. You betcha.
Yeah. So it's naked witches.
Yeah.
And it just started as a fun thing last October, and the audience for it grew astoundingly big. And I kept getting people asking me, are you going to do merchandise? Are you going to do t-shirts or calendars and stuff like that? And to my mind, a book is always the best first place for a series of drawings. And, I was talking to the Zoop people. They've been wanting me to do something with them for a while. And I said, let's do this. And they were 100% on board. And as of now, it's just shy. It's 13.7. When we started, we were hoping to hit 5,000. So that's pretty healthy, I think. I'm pretty happy with that.
Is that about three times your goal?
Our initial goal was 5,000. So we're falling short of three times the initial goal so far. I think I'm seeing estimates based on people who know far more about this than I, that we should get close to 20.
Wow. Very good. Now, the thing, I always have to do math when I try to understand when this thing is going to end. It's going to be early November, I think, is the safe thing to say at this point.
Yeah, it's ending. Today's what, the 11th, I think? Yeah.
Yeah, we're recording on the 11th. Yeah.
This will end November 2nd.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know, because that'll help with people to get your, because they don't say those dates on Zoop stuff. They always list the number of days, and then I have to do math, and I'm never quite good at math on a calendar, so I always have to figure it out, and so do that. So let's see. Your rewards, you've got a soft cover.
Yep.
You've got a signed soft cover. Then you've got the high quality print art bundle with the soft cover. The retailer bundle, tip jar, the add-ons has a high-quality art print. And that's when we get into your other works. The Second Coming, Volume 1, signed by you. Volume 2, The Doom That Came to Gotham, signed by you. Idle Hands, which I don't think I've seen before.
Sketchbook I printed just to sell at conventions.
Oh.
And I was going to do a new printing of it, as well as an additional sketchbook. But I decided not to do cons this year because everything's still a mess out there.
Right.
So I had a nice little pile, and I said, well, we can make this a potential reward too. And some people nibbled.
So. Ooh, good. Very good. Other books, We Don't Kill Spiders, Cherry Blackbird, Count Draco Knuckle Duster, 7 Years in Darkness, all kinds of good stuff there. So
yeah, my friend Justin Schmalke, he's like a one-man horror comic book industry. And I've been lucky enough to do, like, he gives me such fun things to work with. So it was just drawing these covers for these books. I'm probably going to do more in the future. It's just great, darkly humorous horror stuff. So it was really fun.
Okay. So, when you're doing the sketches, how do you do it? Because, you know, one of the things people often do on posters and things like that is they kind of tell a quick story in the art. When you're drawing the pictures of the witches, are they based on people you know? Are they creations of yours? Where do the witches come from?
I know, because I've been able to talk about this a little bit. When October rolled around last year, I wanted to participate. I don't particularly like the rules of the usual Inktober with like the prompt list. I just want to come up with something fun to draw, usually on a theme. And I really felt like drawing a witch, because at the time I was drawing some like incredibly woman devoid project, and I just wanted to draw women. And I enjoy drawing them. And I recalled Leroy Neiman's Femlins. Now, a lot of people might be too young for that, but when I was a kid and I was at the right age to encounter Playboy, Leroy Neiman used to draw these little pen and ink studies of sexy women who were wearing opera gloves and thigh-high stockings and nothing else. And they were just there to decorate the magazine. And those drawings were absolutely stunning. They stuck in my mind. And I said, well, I could do a witch in a feminine style. And I could draw a couple of those in a month. And I ended up drawing all 31 days, a new witch. And then they were so popular, I just kept going with them. In answer, a lot of drawings are based on drawings in my sketchbooks from like studying from photos or live models. Some of them are just constructed out of my imagination. And I've actually had a few friends who volunteered to pose for some of the witches.
Hmm.
So who knew? People like being witches. So. Hmm.
Well, why witch? Was it because it was October and Halloween happens in there? Is that why you started drawing them?
Absolutely. I mean, there's lots of like pure, I mean, it could have been 31 zombies. It could have been, 31 vampires, any kind of like spooky season subject could have worked, but I wanted to draw, sexy women and witches, you know, they can be sexy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. Yeah. Maybe you can answer something. If you don't know that the answer to this, that's fine with me. I've always wondered what a warlock is, because I've heard people call male witches and not warlocks, and some people do and some people don't. I don't know if you know the answer to that, just because we're talking about witches.
I'm not 100% sure where it came from, but I do know warlocks don't exist in the whole Wiccan idea. If you're a witch, you're a witch. Mm-hmm. Male or female or whatever. And I'm pretty sure warlocks were a made-up term added either by Hollywood or fiction later to try and create a male role in what was ostensibly largely women. So it's like the idea – it may be like some of the theories I heard about ninjas, where ninjas really didn't exist. They were just – you know, they were fabricated after the era they supposedly existed in. And it was just people who were good at, you know, hiding and would take care of things. So I remember at a young age, I had a friend who was incredibly like into those Mac Bolan executioner novels and everything else. And he picked up a book on history of the ninja. And one of my friends' older brother said, I studied Japan. He was actually in university. I studied Japan. There were no ninjas. So it's like I'm sitting here reading his book, and like he said, all the historical stories were nonsense. So it's based on that. Apparently, ninjas are as real as warlocks are.
Okay. Now, according to the Zoop.gg page, which is it's zoop.gg/C as in cat /coven. That's where it's at. And the timeline says interiors and cover are completely finished, and the only thing left to do is format the files for the printer. We expect the book to be ready to hand or to head to print a month after the campaign's over. Printing and shipping should take about 2 more months, so delivery of rewards is expected to be done in February and March 2024. So you're basically all finished with all this good stuff.
Well, it's mostly true because I'm doing the witches all this month, so when the campaign ends, everything will have been done for 2 days before the campaign ends. When funding for this ends, everything will be done apart from just assembly for the printing files. There's certain additions that I have to do. I have to do a special sheet for signing and doing remarks. In fact, that just filled up today. We had 45 remarks. So those would be signed with a little sketch inside the book. And those sold out today. The last one went. And I think we might be adding 15 more, but at a higher price point.
Hmm.
And then that would be it for the campaign. So I think we're going to cap out about 60.
Wow.
So it's apart from the witches themselves, the only other thing I have to draw is the tip-in sheet that we're going to print up. So it has a nice spot for my signature, a nice spot for a sketch, but doesn't look like it's missing something if the person just got the signature.
Hmm. Okay, very good. And remarks and stuff like that. All set. So that'll be good. See, I wish other people who did crowdfunding would take this point of view to it. I literally paid for a book about 4 years ago, and it finally just showed up a couple of weeks ago Kickstarter. And I thought I was never going to see it, but I was happy to see it when it finally came. But not everybody does that in crowdfunding. I'm glad to hear you're doing that, because that is – I wish people would emulate that.
The thing is, it's like crowdfunding's hard, man, especially if you've never done anything before like it. I mean, luckily, the biggest part of why I'm with Zupier is because they take a bigger bite for this, but they do all the fulfillment. So they're doing all the jobs I'm not trained to do. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, because they've been doing this for a while, they were able to work out what the costs are. So our goal was a lot more realistic than I might have come up with on my own. They rejected a lot of initial ideas for add-ons because a lot of people will add add-ons and they'll completely mess up the shipping and they'll lose a ton of money on shipping. It's better to deal with professionals.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. And by the way, if you're on the fence, there's a couple of interesting people who have good things to say about it. Mike Mignola, who we've talked about, says, "It's been such a joy watching this drawing pop up online. Beautifully done, simple, which is not easy, and charming, which is really not easy. Richard has a wonderful light touch with the female figure." And then Bill Sienkiewicz says, "Richard Pace's witch drawings are delightfully sexy. Pen and ink tours de force. Gorgeous, fun, and a bit naughty, exactly as they should be," he says. So Howie Chaykin's in there if you want to see it. He's got a longer thing. Howie does tend to go a little verbose. But if you want to read his thing, it's out on zeep.gg as well. So no problem reading it there. But I thought those were kind of the punchiest ones. So we would go and do those since I think they're all very, very strong endorsements of what you're up to. So I think that's great.
Yeah, they're great. All of them are great. And Howard's Fargo just launched on Zoop too.
Mm-hmm. There's something going on.
For people to go check out Zoop. Yeah.
Yeah. That's because I interviewed Jordan Plosky, one of the main guys behind it, way back when Zoop first started, because I'm always interested when new crowdfunding things come up, because Kickstarter has gotten off into socks and air conditioners and stuff. And I'm going like, I thought I went to Kickstarter for comics and stuff like that, but they've gone off into stuff that I don't particularly care about anymore. So when I see Zoop coming along and them actually focusing on comics and comic related stuff, I'm very intrigued. And so I've been a big supporter of theirs ever since they started. And I think they do a tremendous job.
I am very happy to be working with them. And very likely, my next crowdfunded project will be with them. I don't see why I would move. It's just, they're great people. They're really helpful. They really know what they're doing. And if they don't know something, they hustle like crazy to make sure they figure it out. I feel like I'm in a good spot with these people.
Well, let you do the stuff you do best, and that's the artwork.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's what I like to do, man.
Imagine that. It's a good stuff. And of course, Coven, a book of 100 witches. Do you think you might do another Coven 2, a book of another 100 witches? Or do you think that might come along in the future?
Well, right now, the tentative plan, if the campaign does make it into the 20s, I'll probably use the little bit left over after everything else is done. To buy myself some time to actually work on a witch graphic novel for next year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like I've already done so much world building with these witches. It'd be a good idea for me to actually, you know, tell a story with them.
Cool. So you already built the characters. There's no reason to let them sit around and go to waste.
Exactly. And it's just, the one I just posted today, the witch is sitting on a giant skull. And I went, oh, yeah, you know what? Yeah, there used to be giants in this world, and the witches took care of most of them. And that just became like a little thing. Is there more of a story there? Maybe. But when you're designing things like this and coming up with ideas on the fly, invariably you're going to come up with what are things that will become stories. So I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Because whenever I talk to people who do posters and who do these kinds of things, they always tell me that there's kind of a story going on. This is like a snapshot of something happening in a story that they have the whole story outlined in their mind, but they only really get to show the snapshot. So that helps make the thing much more interesting visually, because something is happening. They're obviously in the middle of something, and that makes it more visually interesting.
Yes, exactly. And the witches are always, they're living their own best lives. And they're often doing things that we all do, but, you know, they're smiling and wearing fishnet gloves. I mean.
And a hat.
And a hat, yes. The hat's mandatory.
Okay, so it looks like a great book. And based on where we are already, you have a big success on your hand. So let's hope we get past the 20,000 and good things happen with that. So I just think it's wonderful stuff. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Well, probably the first and foremost place to go is Instagram. It's Richard_Pace on Instagram. I'm on the newer platform, Blue Sky. Which is essentially my Twitter replacement. And it is a wonderful, wonderful place so far. And that's also Richard Pace on Blue Sky. And those are probably the best places to find me on social media. But plus, I also have my $1 a month Patreon. You can see, unfortunately, because of the way social media is, I was fighting with Instagram. Even though they say they're allowing artistic nudity, they were censoring and shadow banning my witch drawings. So then I just leaned in. Everything that I draw that gets posted to the social media shows up uncensored. And some of these censorship things are so absurdly minimum, but it all shows up on Patreon. You can see everything.
Oh, good.
So people have two options to see the witches without the weird little censorship pentagrams. Is that either in the book or on my Patreon page, which is also Richard Pace on Patreon. So,
okay, good. I was going to ask how people can get to Patreon and do that for you. You mentioned that you weren't going to conventions. Do you think you're going to start up doing that again in 2024 maybe?
I'm optimistic. I've applied for C2E2, which is my favorite con of the year, for next year, and the Toronto Comics Arts Festival here in Toronto, TCAF. I do know I'm probably going to try and do at least 2-3 more. I'm not going to do like the 10 cons a year, like before COVID. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to be more picky about what conventions I go to, just in terms of the time allowed to go to the convention, how much it eats into my work. Mm-hmm. But I still want to get out there and meet fans and make new fans. So. Mm-hmm.
Great, because I was helping my roommate who had a book out, and we were doing cons almost every week, and it really kind of wore us down. And then, of course, the COVID hit, and we stopped doing that altogether. I'm thinking about doing some more next year as well. So it's you kind of have to be choosy, I think, which ones you're going to do.
It really is. It's I mean, the economy's still suppressed. And I've seen too many people. I saw enough people talking about not taking vaccinations when the COVID was in the heat of the media. And now that it's not, you know, those people are still out there and you don't know if they're safe or not. I myself have lost 7 people in that first 8 months of COVID.
Wow.
Friends and acquaintances. And I just don't want to be one of them. I want to live to a good, ripe old age.
Right. Well, I took all the shots and stuff, but I still got it.
I've had it twice, but I think it would have been a lot worse had I not had the vaccinations.
That's my hope. I mean, I have no way to gauge, but, you know, I'm grateful it's over and done with. I haven't seen anything coming since then. I know other people have had it twice, and yeah. I've been kind of like – yikes. Once was more than enough for me. Thank you. I'm done with that as far as I can tell. So it's great. So any other things that we should know about what you've got coming that we should be aware of?
Okay. There's other stuff coming that I can't talk about because of NDAs.
Okay.
But honestly, Savage Sword of Conan, Coven, the story in Cryptids. I think my plate's full enough right now.
Good. I always like to hear that. When some people say, I have enough that's keeping me going, just the pace I like, then I'm happy to hear that because that's what we need. We need people. People like you need to be busy, and that's a good thing. So I'm happy that you're busy.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have more than I can generally handle, even though it cuts into the sleep a bit, I'm happy.
Well, that's good. See, there's so many people. It's like George Perez, or Perez, I guess he pronounced it. I always loved his artwork, and he always said to people, whatever you do, don't tell me how big the page is going to be, because I'll be drawing. If it's a 20 by 20 page, I spend weeks trying to fill in every last square inch full of something.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that I have been here to enjoy his artwork, and I'm grateful to get to enjoy your artwork as well. So this is good stuff, and I wish you much success, you know, Richard, going forward. Hopefully, when stuff happens in the future, we'll get another chance to talk again, because I'd really enjoy that.
I'd like that too.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.